Wednesday night, in your prayer, trust me on this because I remember, it started raining really hard during our service. And, I mean, it was a good enough rain that it was very obvious that it was raining really hard. Brother Donald, in his closing prayer, he said, "Thank you for our building, for this place." And sometimes we'll talk about the building that we have, this place of comfort. I often think about our own home and how thankful I am that it protects us from storms and rain, and we can heat it and we can cool it. And so we often think about facilities and how important they are to you. But really, have you given much thought about the church building or the church's building, the building that we're in? You know, most congregations in this country have buildings. They have and have purchased buildings or are purchasing buildings. But how many of you have actually met? And I don't know, I don't usually call for a show of hands, but and I'm asking how many of you have actually met as a member in a congregation that did not meet in a building that was the church owned or rented or not rented, but, you know, like we have, where that's where you worshiped as a member, okay? And looking around, just a few of us. But there's been a lot of debate over the church building over the years. And so I want to talk about some of that. But, you know, when I grew up in Indiana, we had an eldership. So this was in the 70s. There was two men that were serving as elders. I was not yet a Christian, so I'm young. But then one of the elders, and I've mentioned this before, he decided that the church had no right to have a building and that you need to meet in your home. And so he left, and that was the end of the eldership. So then for years, there was an eldership in that congregation because one of the elders decided that, no, we don't have the right for a building, and so he left. And so I remember later years, my dad, when we moved to Florida, this was a man that our family knew. In fact, his own family, one of his sons, his oldest son, serves as an elder in that congregation, did not go the way of his father. But my dad wrote letters back and forth with him, and I had the opportunity to read those years ago, this discussion that they had over a building, the church building. Does the church have a right to have a building? Some brethren have actually left the assembly of the church in favor of a house church. There's a movement that was sparked by a couple of books, and it led to them saying, well, you need to meet in the house. And I mentioned some of this when we were talking about the Lord's Supper in 1 Corinthians 11, but it is this more casual and intimate assembly in the home. There is more of a devotional type of teaching with little sustenance. It's more casual, it's more devotional, and by devotional, it'd be more brief thought, kind of like a short invitation type thought that I give. It's kind of like along that lines. Local congregations, their leadership is spoken of and ridiculed against. They will speak out against any type of eldership and that type of thing. And this is where I was mentioning some of this around the Lord's Supper is they extend the Lord's Supper time, but then it evolves into a meal. And so I have a quote here from one of those books. It's Legard Smith's book called Radical Restoration. And he says, "The most universally overlooked feature of the Lord's Supper as practiced in the primitive church is that from all appearances, it was observed in conjunction with the fellowship meal. That is, a normal, ordinary meal with the usual variety of food. From its very inception, therefore, the Lord's Supper was an integral part of a real meal." And I've mentioned that's what they do. It's like they just kind of have a meal and they observe the Lord's Supper, or they observe the Lord's Supper and it just turns into some type of a meal. And this is a movement that took place. I'm thinking of another preacher whose daughter went into that after she got married. And I remember And to this day, I'm not sure if where she is and if that's still the case. Went to school with some fellows that in an area in Kentucky that have pretty much done that, more casual. It also, what it does is it lends itself to this women being able to speak and leading discussion in this more casual house church. And again, this is all done in saying that what we're doing is foolish and wrong, and you know, they're going back to the New Testament pattern. But what also is usually involved is there's clapping, and there is hand waving, and there is outburst of affirmations, praise the Lord or amen. And then there's a disdain for the church buildings and local preachers. That again, they look and say that this is something that we're bucking against. That's all just tradition, and so they move towards the house. Well, you know, all over the world, there are brethren who do not own a building. They don't. They would like to, but they don't have one. They may even be working to somehow obtain a permanent structure to worship in, and so. I haven't brought a lesson like this before, simply titled The Church Building. But when I speak on the subject of biblical authority, well, I talk about how do we have the right to have a facility to actually, you know, how do we do that? And it comes up in the authority lessons. But there are a number of questions that revolve around the church building. And so this is a new lesson for me. So after reading a good article by a preacher friend of mine by the name of Andy Socor, I realized, you know, I should bring a lesson on this particular subject. And I hope that as we go through this, you'll understand why, that this would be something to talk about. Because it's going to talk about principles. It's going to talk about what does the scriptures teach? But we don't really sometimes give much thought about the church building. Well, does a local congregation need a church building? The simple answer is no. It doesn't have to have a church building. It doesn't need a church building and to own a church building to be able to carry out the work. In America, with, you know, it's very common. And it's not something that we really think about for, you know, because even if you think about in our area, Piney Grove and us, and then down the street, we got Singing River and Helton Drive and College View and Brook Hill and Underwood Heights, where some of us were this afternoon. And it's like, well, they've all got buildings. And they own them and they've had them for years. And so it may be something that we don't think about. And it may actually be something that we can become to believe that, you know, a building is necessary. But biblically, it is not necessary. And how do we find the answer to the question, does a local church need a building? Well, you look to the scriptures, so that's what we'll do. Look at Jerusalem in Acts chapter 5 and verse 12. What about the church when it first started after Pentecost? Do you remember where we're told that the church was assembling in Acts chapter 5? And you remember, this is thousands of people. So to think that thousands of people are actually assembling in somebody's home is not in any way imaginable. So in Acts chapter 5 and verse 12, we learn that, and through the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were done among the people, and they were all with one accord, where? In Solomon's porch. So that's this side, long corridor, if you would, of the temple. And that's where they were meeting. They were gathering in Solomon's court, and they were all with one accord. And one accord would mean that the church is there. And then in our scripture reading that Brother Phil read, in Acts chapter 19, it says, and I want you to flip over there, and I just want you to notice the wording in verse 19, because it says, I'm sorry, 9 and 10. Verse 10. Actually, the end of verse 9. He departed from them, Paul, and withdrew the disciples, the followers. That would be those that are following Christ. We're talking about Christians in Ephesus. And he reasoning daily where? In the school of Tyrannus. Now, that's not a home. So where are they gathering? They're actually gathering in a school. Have any of you ever met in a school? Well, a lot of congregations have actually rented a facility, maybe a cafeteria or something like that, a classroom. The congregation in Williamsburg for years rented one of the classrooms and may very well still be doing this, but the Rockefellers bought an old African-American school, and that's where they put all of the training for all the characters at Williamsburg, and they rent one of the rooms in that old building. And I've gone over there for a gospel meeting where they were in the old auditorium, and that's where the meeting was. And so the school of Tyrannus is where they were meeting. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, this is where, you know, they, now on the first day of the week when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them, continued his message until midnight. There were many lamps in the upper room where they were gathered together. They're gathering in an upper room. The text, for some reason, tells us there's many lamps. We might say, well, it's getting late in the evening. But my dad used to say, well, where'd the lamps come from? We don't have any clue. And then, they're in some type of place where they're meeting in an upper room. And that's really about all we can say about that. To assume and say, well, that was somebody's house. Well, we already know that you don't have to assemble in a house. Even in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 22, this was a point really that I hadn't thought of. In fact, I don't even have this one, didn't get this one on there. I must have added it. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 22. When we were studying about the Lord's Supper, you remember in verse 22 he says, what, do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? And somebody says, well, can we infer that they weren't even meeting in a house for him to say, don't you have houses to meet in? And that's a good thought. And what I'm wanting us to understand is you can't be matter of fact about you have to meet in a home and you have no right to have a building, because we see the church meeting in various locations. But then it is true that they were meeting in homes. The church in Laodicea in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 15. And just because we might be able to turn to a few more passages that says they were meeting in a home, doesn't say that is where you have to meet. In Colossians 4 and verse 15, greet the brethren who are in Laodicea and Nymphas and the church that is in his house. So here is a church that is meeting in his home. In Philemon chapter 1 and verse 2, in the short letter of Philemon, we learn very quickly the church in your house, as he writes to Philemon. To Philemon, our beloved friend and a fellow laborer, to the beloved Apphia and Crispus, our fellow soldiers, and to the church in your house. So the church, again, is meeting in a home. And then I think we're all familiar that in 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 19 and also Romans 16, 5, that Priscilla and Aquila, the church met in their home. When you study Priscilla and Aquila and this couple and how active they are, one of the things that you point out is that the church was meeting in their home. So it's clear from the scriptures that a congregation can meet in various places. And so I'm not sure why the man who had been an elder would look at these passages and then somehow conclude anything different, but he did. And he started meeting in his home. And he met in his home until he passed away. So I asked you at the start if you had met with the congregation on a regular basis in a location other than the church building. Well, the congregation in Ida that I worked with for 6 years, it started in the basement of my in-laws. They set up the chairs and left everything set up in the basement, and we assembled in the basement, and then we found where we could rent what had been a daycare in the town of Samaria up the road, 3 miles or so, and we met there for a while until the township said, wait a minute, I don't know that we can let a church meeting there. We've been giving you variances. And so we moved into a storefront in Ida. And we met there until the church disbanded. So the congregation met in a variety of facilities to carry out the work that was given to the congregation. Did we have to have a building to do the work? No, to own that building, to purchase a building, to have a building built, of course not. Now, the command to assemble is what authorizes a building. And this is when you talk about lessons on authority, you have to understand that, what's the command? Well, in 1 Corinthians 11, 18 and verse 20, both of those, when you come together, the local congregation think about how the congregations were in the New Testament. Well, there was a congregation in Corinth. There was a congregation in Laodicea. There was a congregation in Philippi. There was a congregation in Ephesus. And so we see in the seven churches of Asia, we see these congregations. There was one up in Antioch. There was the church in Jerusalem. And so there's congregations that are in various places, and they are commanded to partake of the Lord's Supper. Come together to partake of the Lord's Supper. In Acts 20 and 7, when the disciples came together to break bread, the church assembled in 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 23. You remember that was the discussion we just went through? And they were using their gifts in the assembly. And he had to order that and correct that and all those misunderstandings. But they were coming together as a congregation. And that's what God has called us to do, to come together, to sing, to partake of the Lord's Supper. And so we carry these things out as God has commanded. And in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23 to 25, you are to provoke one another unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. So the congregation was to assemble. And so to observe all of these things, to carry out these commands, where do you do that? Well, you can do that in a home, an upper room, rented, a large porch, or a school. So you have to find some place to do that. Now, so where's the authority to own a building? Well, it's the same way of thinking. The authority to obtain a building is authorized in the command to assemble. We've been commanded to do this. And to do that, you have to have a place. It may be somebody's home. But you know, some of the congregations, I don't know how large Southern Boulevard got at any one time, but I think it was 100 and some. Was it over 200 at any time? Mid 100, 150, 175, something like that. Well, has anybody got a home big enough to put everybody in that? So again, so the command is to assemble. And so each congregation is left to decide the best way to achieve that command. And it may not be expedient to build a facility, but instead rent one. And that's the way a lot of congregations start, is you just can't hit the ground running like that. And so in time. Now again, what are you thinking about when we say expedient? Well, you know, the use of the Lord's money, if we think long term, and of course we don't know when the Lord's going to come, but you know, it may be the very best thing to do is to, let's say to get the building, it's $1,000, but if you rent, it's $2,000 to rent from, you know, this guy down the street or whatever. You know, so things become expedient. It may be expedient to purchase a facility as a long-term solution. Why? Because it establishes permanency, which is important for a congregation and people to want to reach the lost. That becomes something to consider. Think about this location. This is a good location right along the highway. But those who have turned to the use of homes exclusively apparently can't see this point. And that is, the command is to assemble. And then we're how do we do that? Well, he gives us some judgment. Now, it can be done wrong, as I'll mention in a minute. But, you know, depending on the place, you know, the command is to assemble, and a congregation, again, lawfully, can do what it needs to do to obey that command. Now, again, that does not deny sometimes what sparks this idea of a rebellion against, well, church buildings, you're just interested in the church building, it's all about the church building and all this kind of stuff. Understanding that, of course, can overemphasis be placed on a building? Yes. Can brethren do that? Yes. Have brethren done that? Yes. Do they continue to do stuff like that? Yes. But just because you can say yes, it can be overemphasized, and even poor decisions be made, that doesn't make it wrong, does it? Because you can do it right, but just because it can be done wrong doesn't mean it's the old throwing out the baby with the bathwater. You know, understanding that those can happen, that does not change the fact that this overemphasis or misunderstanding is somehow makes it wrong. And I think we need to recognize that. But what happens is they say, well, the misunderstandings and overemphasis of the building leads me to say, well, you can't have them at all. And that's simply not right. And let me give you an illustration. You remember in Corinth that we just studied, was there an overemphasis on the speaking of tongues? There was a lot of overemphasis. Was there an abuse of the use of the speaking in tongues? Yeah, there's an abuse of the use of speaking in tongues. Was authority given to use the tongues? Yes. So just because they were overemphasizing and abusing it, that misuse did not make speaking in tongues wrong. The misabuse and the misuse was what was wrong. Do you understand that point? So just because there's an abuse or a misuse, and people, brethren, you know, place an overemphasis on the building or whatever, that doesn't make it wrong. The abuse and the misunderstanding is wrong, and the overemphasis. So the command to assemble the church, that's ecclesia, that's what that is, to call out assembling. And to own a building, it may be expedient, it may be profitable or advantageous when we think about what expediency means to carry out the command. But it may not be expedient at a given time to purchase a building. And that's okay, because owning a building is not necessary to be right with God. Assembling together to worship God is what's required to be right. Now, this is where I think we understand. I hope you understand the things that I've been saying, because here's where there is abuse and there are things that are wrong. As early as just a couple of days ago, I can tell you I specifically saw a letter, and I'll explain that as we go. So how do you raise money for a building? So the congregation, like I said, the question is, what about the church building? Lessons about the church building. Well, how do you raise money for a building? Congregation determines it's to our advantage to own a facility. How much thought do we give about building or buying a building? Well, over the years, even here, occasionally a letter shows up. And this happened just a couple of days ago. And I was already working on this lesson. I was like, wow, there's one right there. And it is a congregation saying, please send us money so we can build a building. It's a request to send money to help another congregation purchase a building. It's not necessarily a poor part of the world. It can actually be some congregation in the United States sends out a letter saying, help us build a building, send us money. And we think, Well, that's a good thing. Have you thought about this? That's what I want us to think about. Is it lawful for one congregation to obtain funds to have a building? Well, the simple answer to that is no, and this is why. The church's authority to raise money for the work, and this is, understand what we're saying. The church is authorized to raise money for this work, and any autonomous work, is through the first day of the week contribution. In 1 Corinthians 16, verse 1 and 2, as we're beginning our study of 1 Corinthians 16, Lord willing, on Wednesday night, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given order to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also on the first day of the week, let each one of you lay in something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collection when I come. There's no authority for raffles, fundraisers, business ventures to raise funds. There simply isn't. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 through 8, but this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things may have an abundance for every good work. So here we have further teaching. It's a free will offering from each member. And when is that to take place? On the first day of the week. Now that rules out Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday all the way to Saturday. Now, I want you to think what's happened, too, and this is an aside, but and this may come up. You can be thinking about it when we talk about this particular section, but when COVID hit, a lot of congregations just started putting it, you can give online. Well, does that mean I can give on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Well, if they don't close it down and make it only available on Sunday, then you can send and do your contribution whenever that hits you. And so we can't get into this mentality of what God is doing is calling us together and he's having us take up this collection. It's a first day of the week collection. It's not law. Think about what I'm saying. So, and we're going to talk about a benevolent need in just a moment, because you may be thinking about, well, what about a benevolent need? And we'll see, does this fit what we would qualify as a benevolent need? A need. Is it lawful for a congregation to send money to aid another work in buying a building? That's the question. And again, think, well, that's a good thing. Well, what we're considering is, how do we raise money for something like that? Is that lawful? It's not lawful. Well, we see a congregation sending money to another congregation. Look at Acts chapter 11. So we think, okay, wait a minute. We've got a congregation sending funds to another congregation right over here in Acts chapter 11, verse 27 to 30. And in these days, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch. Then one of them named Agabus stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. This they also did and sent it to the elders by the hand of Barnabas and Saul. Well, there you go. Well, this was going to be a famine. This was going to be a life and death situation here, where the church was sending benevolent needs to help them during this time, where there was a lack of the things that were needed. The collection in Corinth was for that purpose. There was a need for the saints, collection of the saints. There was a need in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. And that prompted the collection to be taken up and then used to help the saints. And while trying to prompt the Corinthians to finish and fulfill what they had said they were going to do, Paul speaks of how the Macedonians in Romans 15, 26, 2 Corinthians 9, 2, had already been ready a year earlier. In fact, Paul had bragged on the Corinthians to get the others to respond, And then he had to go back to them and say, you haven't done what they've already done. So you need to get at it. Now, the question is, and again, this is a sincere question. Is providing money to build a building a benevolent need? One's survival is not determined by the possession of a building, is it? I would find that highly suspect. Now, somebody might say, well, there might be a circumstance. Well, we'd want to consider that very carefully. But the biblical example of funds being sent to another congregation is for benevolent needs. There's no other example found in the New Testament of funds from one congregation to another other than for a benevolent need. We don't even have a congregation sending money to another congregation for preaching. The money was sent directly to the preacher. You see, these patterns, these things are the way that we are supposed to do them. And so the Lord's work can carry out its work without the church building. And that's important for us to understand. So this letter requesting funds from a congregation to help purchase a building is not according to the scriptures and the teaching of the scriptures. And so we may get a letter. Are we supposed to say, oh, you know, they need a building. We should send money. Well, I don't find any examples of anything like that in the scriptures. So then that says, okay, so if the congregation cannot be solicited, well, how about an individual? Could you put out the word, could this congregation, we want to build a building, could we put out the word and say, hey, can the individuals send us some money? Can they be asked to help support this? Well, it's true that, and now again, we're getting back to lessons on authority. What the individual can do, what the church can do, they're not the same. And it is true an individual can do things that they can eat in their home. The church can't eat a meal. That's not what it's called to do. This is based upon an individual is not the church. Well, the truth is found in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16, where, again, I'm having to kind of sum some of this up instead of taking the time. But this is where you have a widow. The first responsibility is to the home. And he says, so that the church would not be burdened. The individual has the first responsibility, not the church. So the church would not be burdened. And what that does is it makes a clear distinction between the individual and the church. They're not one and the same. And so individuals can make decisions with their funds, their use. And they can do that prior to it entering into the collection. You remember we learned that lesson with Ananias and Sapphira. When you had it, you sold the property, that was yours. You didn't have to lie. You could have taken half of it, two-thirds of it. You could have done whatever you wanted and given what you needed to give and chose to give, and that would have been fine. But you lied and let everybody believe you gave everything. And they were struck dead. But what we learn is that, yeah, an individual's funds are theirs, and when they, up to the point that it goes into the treasury. Now, let me give you a quick example of this. Just a quick example. The funds are under your control, and then it goes to the church's control. And that's an important lesson to understand. Well, when I was moving to Michigan, this couple decided, we want to give an extra $300, and that $300 is going to go to help Stacy. And here I am going, okay, I'm going to get an extra $300 to support my family, and I had to be the one that said, no, that's not right. It wasn't right. Why is that not right? Because you don't put your money in here and say, this just goes to Stacy. I don't want it to go to anybody else. You can't use the treasury that way. So they couldn't say, we're going to put $300 in, but you have to use that $300 to pay Stacy. Everybody's shaking their head. You see that point? So what's the right? Well, once it went into the treasury, now the church The church has to use it and use it properly. And the church has to make that decision. And if there's an eldership, that's what they're going to be responsible for. We didn't have elders, but the point was seen very quickly. And that's what we're talking about here. So an individual or individuals are asked to help a building fund. Well, what is the authorized means of a congregation obtaining the funds? First day of the week contribution. Their first day of the week contribution. See, this isn't a need, because we've already shown you can meet in various places. Now, again, our hearts tug when it's brethren over in a third world country and they just want something permanent, and there's so many regulations, and Ed Brand may come and just eat me up and say, you don't understand all the world and all the politics and stuff. We're looking at the scriptures and just trying to understand, how do you get the funds? Well, so now I send funds and I'm placing it in their treasury, but I'm here in Alabama and they're over in a different country. Now, I can do that to support a preacher, but can I send money into the first day of the week collection? And what if my collection is, what if the treasurer gets in and he does it on a Thursday? And we start thinking about semantics and things like that. And we start, what we're asking is, how is the congregation supposed to be able to obtain a building? And it's not from begging from other people. If they were starving, that's a different thing. But to say, we buy our building, even the individuals shouldn't buy into this and negate the first day of the week collection. Members of a congregation are contributing as they have prospered and purposed in their heart. It's their work. They bear a responsibility. And that needs to be considered. And to look outside sometimes is not what's needed. There needs to be an internal look at one another's hearts. Now, again, that can seem cruel because we're thinking American versus other countries, but we have to do things biblically. Let me give you another quick situation. A congregation that was quickly moving, it was quickly moving away from the truth. They sold their building. They decided this building had been there, it was owned. Gospel preachers had been there for 50 years, had worked, and they sold it. And one of the elders, he was a realtor. And you're thinking, okay, Southern Boulevard did that, right? You sold your building. The difference was the congregation floated the loan. Payments were being made monthly to the congregation with an option to buy their facility that they got out of. Now, before you think, I wish I had thought of that, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Well, the church isn't a real estate business. Why not loan money to a member? Emma needs a car. Why not float her a loan? There's no difference. And then the people who bought the building were teaching false doctrine. They were teaching false doctrine, and this congregation was funding it, providing the facility. And so you might say, well, we sold it through a realtor and all those kinds of things. I want you to be thinking about this, because you're going to start thinking about semantics. You're going to start thinking about, well, but if we do the realtor, and well, those are business transactions through institutions. A bank, a realtor. What we're talking about is the church, the congregation becoming the bank, becoming the lender. And I remember saying, this isn't lawful. And they were flabbergasted. They couldn't even understand, because it was just another transaction in their mind. It was just another ordinary day of real estate transactions. But understanding this point, and I'm closing, I want you to start sweating, is this. If you understand that point about what's the work of the church, what is the work of the church? It's not a business. That answers the question of, well, what about a wedding in the building? What about a funeral in the building? Do we think the church building? And we just say, well, why not? Is that the work of the church? Is to marry people? Is to bury people? Those are works of the home. The family is the one that lines up the funeral home and those types of things, and the wedding. It's not the work of the church. And so, but this is debated. Again, this is debated. You'll find that, oh, we don't have a problem with that. And so they have weddings and they have funerals. Is it a work of the church or is it a work of the individual? It's not a work of the church. These are transactions and responsibilities that often take place and do take place in the home. So you can't blur the lines. And so the building, it's been purchased with what has been given as God commanded. And then the building is used in the manner in which God has commanded it. And so we use this to come together to teach, to partake the Lord's Supper, to carry out the work, to carry out the command to assemble. And the building aids us in doing that. But it does, it's not a necessity, and we need to make sure that we understand that. And even though an individual says, well, I can do what I want to do with my money, that's true, but you want to do what you can do lawfully when it comes to matters like this. You don't want to aid in doing something that is wrong. Well, anyway, I'm sure you've got questions. You're probably thinking about a lot of different things. As I said, I've never brought a lesson on just the church building, but I hope that that's been helpful in some way. That hasn't dealt with anything with regards to an invitation, but obviously before we dismiss, we want to invite anyone who may be subject to the invitation to do so, and Craig has selected this song as Together We Stand and Sing.